Welcome to the Early Childhood Intervention Family Voices podcast. We acknowledge traditional owners of the lands on which the podcast is recorded and would like to pay our respects to elders past, present and emerging. The Family Voices podcast is a series of conversations with families and professionals. We hope the podcast builds on families' knowledge, skills and confidence when navigating early childhood supports. The podcast is also an opportunity for families to share their individual stories as a family with a child with a disability or developmental delay. This podcast series is brought to you by Early Childhood Intervention Australia, VICTAS. To learn more about the podcast and our organisation, please visit ekiavic.org.au.
Hello and welcome. You're with Simone Dudley, and today I'd like to introduce guest Kira McKillop. Hi, Kira.
Hi.
Kira is mum to Jackson, who's 7, and Gemma, who's 4, and she and her husband Tim live on the edge of ACT in New South Wales. Kira, I wonder if you could introduce yourself to the listeners and share a little bit about your family.
Yeah, absolutely. So like you said, I've got 2 children, Jackson and Gemma. Jackson is autistic and also has a brain condition, which is called Chiari malformation. He had brain surgery for that in 2022. I'm married to Tim, who is a fantastic full-time carer to Jackson. And I work for EACH, which is the partner in the community for the NDIS. I'm currently an administration officer, but I'm just about to move into the family engagement team, which is really exciting. I can't wait to be working more closely with families. And I also run a very small organisation called CAPS, which is Carers and Parents Spectrum Supports.
So one busy family indeed, Kira.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
You've mentioned that your journey in the disability space was a real challenge. I wonder if you could share with listeners the story that you experienced and how that feeling of isolation had really impacted you.
So Jackson, he's 7 now, but I guess our journey in this space all started back when he was about 2, and we started noticing things that, you know, we didn't really think were of typical age development, and we started raising the questions with professionals of, oh, you know, is this typical? And at the beginning, people would say, yep, that's fine, that's age appropriate. And then kind of time went on and people also started to see that, okay, well, no, this isn't really typical of the age, or, you know, this is a bit more extreme than we'd usually see, and things like that. So then we started kind of reaching out. You know, we started with Community Health, who did an ages and stages, and then they kind of referred us on to, I think it was Tresillian, and they did some more in-depth assessments. And then we finally got referred to the partner in the community for our area as well. And at that point, I was feeling like it was me, and it was, you know, because of my parenting that all of this was happening, and I didn't really understand what I was doing wrong, and I felt really lost and really down. And it was actually my husband who reached out and did the referral to them, because I couldn't do it. I was just really in a dark space mentally and emotionally. And so he did that for us, and then we got the ball rolling on that, and we were able to get early intervention funding. And then, you know, from that, we were able to link in with the professionals and the OT and the speech. And eventually that led to his diagnosis of autism and ADHD. And yeah, so, and then from there, you know, we've gone from strength to strength the more we've learned about his disability. And also, you know, as a family, we've grown so much.
Well, I've just heard you describe a really challenging time that you just felt so isolated and hopeless. And I'd be curious to know what it was that helped you the most in that period of time.
Look, there's a few things. I think getting that early intervention funding and then being able to speak with professionals to, I guess, validate my concerns, it was like a weight lifted off my shoulder, because I honestly thought that it was, you know, all environmental and, you know, it was our parenting, or, you know, we were doing it all wrong. Or, and then when you have professionals be able to say, oh, actually, no, this is why he's struggling. And, you know, that's really typical for autistic kids. Then it's like, oh, okay. All right. let's work with that. Let's learn how to build the scaffolding for Jackson to be able to be successful, even with those challenges. And then it was also Tim, my husband, if he didn't step up at that moment, then I'm not really sure, you know, where we would be. He also reached out to Gidget House, and I was able to link in with a really great psychologist at the time as well, who was able to help me through that kind of dark period. And yeah, I think without his support and backing, because at that time he was working full time as well, so he didn't really see what was going on in the house, and he didn't fully see the challenges that we were having. So yeah, it was really good for him to just step up and take that load off my shoulders and get all of that sorted. And
yeah, I can hear that. And you mentioned earlier that Tim is now a full-time carer, so he's had some changes to his life. Maybe share a little bit about how that came about.
Yeah, absolutely. So at that time, I was a stay-at-home mum. You know, when Gemma was born, when Jackson was about 2 and a half, so she was born in the thick of all of this. So not only were we kind of navigating early intervention and that whole space, I also had a newborn. So it was a lot to deal with. So I was, you know, a stay-at-home parent at that time, and Tim was working full-time, and he had been with his workplace for 15 years. And in 2000 and where are we now? 2000. And so it was the end of 2022, was also another bit of a challenging time for us, and something had to kind of shift. So we decided to do a big switch, and I went back to work full-time, and he became full-time carer for Jackson. We knew that Jackson was going into kindergarten in 2023, so we really needed that support. He had a lot of challenges in preschool, which meant, you know, we needed a parent there to be able to, you know, drop everything and be able to pick him up or, yeah, navigate that whole system.
Kira, that year was the year that Jackson also had some surgery.
Yeah. So in April 2022, he had brain surgery up in Sydney. So that was a big year for us. We had lots of change. Yeah.
So, Kira, the system you describe has been hard for you to navigate, but you also described that the experience continued to improve with time and with some capacity building on your part from, you're nodding, the early childhood intervention professionals. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about how that started to feel for you when your confidence started to grow and you started to understand more to be able to then support Jackson.
I think the turning point for us was when we did go through that really big change and I went back into work. I knew that when I was going to go back into full-time work, it needed to be aligned with what I was passionate about. And, you know, I was just kind of getting into that advocacy space and finding my feet, I guess, as a parent of a disabled child. So I knew it had to be aligned with that. So when I found the job with Each, I thought, perfect, it's in the space that I want to be more involved in. That's kind of where my passion is. And so when I went into that role, I was thrown into that early intervention space on a different level. You're on the other side of it and you have access, I guess, to all of this knowledge and professional experience and things that I guess are mandatory to know in that industry. But as a parent, it kind of felt like it should have been mandatory to know as a parent as well. So, you know, learning about the best practice guidelines for early intervention and, you know, the standards of care within that space. And that really empowered me to be like, oh, hang on a second, reflecting on some of the things that we've been involved in that weren't working or didn't feel right at the time was because they weren't in line with these best practice standards. And I felt more empowered as a parent knowing all of those things and being able to bring them home to Tim and be like, hey, Tim, like read through this, you know, this is how it should look. And sometimes it doesn't look like that. You know, we need to be advocating for it to really be better for Jackson, you know, whether or not that be in therapy or even in social participation and things like that, like they need to be in line with those standards so that he's getting the best care that he deserves.
Absolutely. And you describe feeling so isolated, lost and hopeless to then, as time passed and your capacity grew and you started really thinking and then questioning and then all of a sudden you're becoming the advocate because after all, you know your son the best And I guess this has got you thinking about what is needed in the sector or what families might need. So you talk about how if we can support families, that outcomes will be better. What do you mean by that, Kira, from your experience?
There's so many different elements to this because I feel like we're really passionate, myself and Tim, we're really passionate about peer-led support. So people with lived experience being able to pass on that knowledge and, you know, the tips and tricks and things to others that are feeling isolated. But also on the flip side, it's the therapists have this fantastic opportunity to build the capacity of the parents as well within that therapy space in, you know, in the weekly or the fortnightly sessions that they're doing with families. I think sometimes it gets all lost and they see the child and that's kind of it. And the parents might be feeling overwhelmed and not know what questions to ask, or, you know, they might not be getting a rundown of what's happening in the sessions. But the allied health sees so many of these families, especially when they're really vulnerable at the beginning of their journeys or even before diagnosis, that it's a really great opportunity to build the capacity of the parents, give them the best practice guidelines, empower them with the knowledge, so that they know what best practice should look like. And having those conversations with parents around their child and around the struggles of the family as a whole unit. Because also in therapy sessions, sometimes it can just be isolated to the child, and that sometimes can't be replicated back at home. So while it's important to build those foundational skills of, you know, fine motor and things like that, I think there needs to be that capacity building of, okay, well, how can we incorporate this at home? How can we build the parental capacity so that the child can work on those skills all the time at home?
Yeah.
Not kind of just in that therapeutic setting.
So if I can replay that, what I'm hearing is where it works best is when you've got an allied health professional that perhaps is taking a broader perspective, not just a narrow view, and really looking at the bigger picture of what the family needs are. And is part of that also you as a parent having the confidence to say, hang on a minute, I'd like to sort of say, this is what I need at the moment?
Absolutely. If I think back to when we would go to speech therapy or something like that, I would just go in, I'd sit on the sidelines. I wouldn't know what to do or what I was able to do in those sessions. And I didn't know that I kind of had a voice. I didn't feel like I had a voice in that situation. I wasn't the professional. And it wasn't until my capacity and confidence grew that I could now, you know, approach a therapist and be like, this is what we're looking for. We're looking for that whole holistic approach, that wraparound. You know, we want to be able to incorporate all of these things into our daily lives. Are you able to work with us to do that? This is what we're really looking for. And this is what's really important to us and sits well with us. And we want to be involved in these sessions, or sometimes we want to have sessions without Jackson that are just focused on building our capacity as a parent. You know, both Tim and I are really passionate about us having the skills to be able to build his scaffolding in everyday life, mostly because Jackson doesn't really engage very well in therapeutic settings. So that's really challenging for us. So that's probably happened out of necessity. But if I think back, I would have never had the confidence because I didn't have the knowledge. And I never really had a therapist at the beginning say, this is what you can do. This, you know, you can be involved and you can have a say in this and that kind of thing.
And I guess after all, what's important is not how well a child performs in a therapy session, but what goes on at home. So building the capacity of the child and the primary caregivers in the natural setting should be the ultimate goal of any early intervention approach, certainly. I'm curious, Kira, how long would you say it took to find this amazing voice that you found?
It took a good 3 years. You know, at the beginning, when we kind of went through the systems, you know, you get past community health to somewhere else. And we finally kind of ended up with that early intervention funding. And then we were able to access the services. I mean, because we were just not in a financial position before that to be able to do that either. It was years.
Jackson was by this stage about 5 years of age, at the time that you describe feeling like you've found your voice and that you've got the capacity to really advocate and communicate effectively within the system to be able to achieve the supports that are important to you and your family. So I think that's really an important point for us all to just think about as a family member that might be going through this, but also as professionals that might be listening, that you'll be working with families that could be at any point in that journey themselves. Thank you so much for sharing your story, Kira. I'd love to just hear a little bit about this small business that you have on the side. So would you share a little bit about CAPS?
So CAPS stands for Carers and Parent Spectrum Supports. My husband and I, being linked in with all these different early intervention places, you often get referred to parenting programs or things like that. And we went to a few of them, and while the content was good and we could take away some things, they weren't always applicable to our family and our dynamic. But what kept us going back to them was the connection with the other parents and carers in the room. And we were just sitting one night after the kids went to bed, and we thought, oh, wouldn't it be great if we could just have a peer support group just with other parents and carers and just be able to talk about everything that goes on in our lives and have them just get it? Because while we both have great families, sometimes they don't fully understand what we're going through. So yeah, we came up with CAPS from there, and we started off with a face-to-face peer support group. And what was really important to us was that it was peer-led. Because, we want people to feel comfortable and safe in sharing with people that really understand. And from there, we kind of thought that we would reach out to the community and see if we could provide what we call our inclusive sensory spaces. But essentially, what that is one of our challenges as a family is participating in the community, because a lot of events and things like that are really overwhelming for Jackson. And we would find ourselves going to these things and Jackson wanting to go to them too, but then they would become too much. And that might be, 10 minutes after we arrive, and it would be too overwhelming and too much. And we wouldn't have anywhere to go or a place to take a break. So we'd have to leave. And that's really upsetting to everyone involved. And, after time passes, Jackson would find himself being like, oh, but I want to go back. And, sometimes with these events, it's a ticketed thing or something like that, and you just can't go back. So the idea behind our inclusive sensory spaces is to be at local community events. And we provide a safe space that people can come to when they just need to take a break. We supply things like headphones and fidgets, and we have little activities that anyone can do. We have puzzles and coloring and Play-Doh and Lego and all these things. But most importantly, it's a safe space that you can come to. You can have a break. You can do whatever you need to do to build your own capacity to then go back out to the event and enjoy the rest of your day. So they're the two kind of things that we do.
I'm guessing that with CAPS, you are working really hard in a peer-led way to advocate for other parents and carers to find their voice.
Yeah, absolutely. We work with local carers and parents on lots of different issues, and they want to know that they're not alone and that, other people are going through it, but also the system is so complex to navigate. They just want to know what to do.
What's
And they want
next?
someone to be like, okay, this is, do this, read this policy or, contact this person or, you can advocate for this. This is okay. Because a lot of the time, as a parent and a carer, you don't know if your expectations are in line with what is reasonable. So sometimes you might think, okay, well, should I advocate for this or is this not something that is, reasonable to be pushing for and things like that? So sometimes people just need reassurance of, that's fine. That's your child's right. Advocate for that.
Yeah, someone
That's
to
fine.
benchmark against, to keep in check.
Absolutely, because it doesn't come with a handbook. It doesn't, there's no rule book that says, these are the expectations you need to be striving for.
Kira, look, thank you so much for sharing your story. I know it's going to resonate with a lot of listeners, and congratulations on your achievements out the other side, working in an industry that you're passionate about and running a sideline that definitely is helping others in your community. So congratulations and wish you all the best. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, Kira, for sharing your story today. I really noticed the great potential that was harnessed in Kira when she felt a sense of empowerment and agency. When Kira felt that sense of confidence, not only was she a happier and healthier version of herself and better able to support Jackson, but in addition, she was able to support her own community by running peer-supported programs. Did you hear Kira say it took her 3 years to find her voice? We know that 3 years can represent a significant and precious period of time during early childhood. Kira was pretty certain that building parents' and primary caregivers' capacity is what actually will lead to better outcomes for children. Kira shared that it was when she really understood the best practice principles that she had a platform to talk with Tim about what supports really would be best for Jackson and what they should look like. And that is how Kira described finding her voice.
We hope you've enjoyed this episode of Early Childhood Intervention Family Voices. Make sure you subscribe to your podcast app and feel free to leave a review to help us gain more understanding of what type of conversations are helpful to you. More information about this podcast can be found on ekiavic.org.au. Until next time, thank you for listening.